all set, Phil?
Yep, okay. Now, you want to start talking about Fairvale, so...
I think I'll start with the introduction here. This is Larry Greer and Bill Carson speaking on behalf of the Rossi Living Museum, and we're here today with Mr. Bill McKnight, a resident of East Riverside and a person very knowledgeable in both East Riverside and Fairvale. So it's, oh yeah, and also today is Wednesday, August the 8th, 2007. So welcome, Bill and Bill.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Great to be here, Larry, and Bill, thanks for having us here this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, to start back in Fairvale, I have to give you a date. And I came up with the date finally because I had nothing written down, but I remember a certain day that gives us a date, and that was the day the war was declared. It was the 1st of September, 1939, and we were at one of Carter's cottages down what they call Shipyard Road, but it used to be the Carter Road, and way down at the beach, there were there were five cottages down there that they used to rent to people that came out from St. John. And as a matter of fact, the Lawson boys, Mike Lawson, and they used to rent one of them. So when I say boys, I was only 10 years old at that time, and the Lawson boys were probably beyond their teens, because they're the ones that have Lawson motors. Those were the days when Shipyard Road, it was only a straight road down to the beach, and the Cosman family and the Browns, Joe Cosman used to have a feed store in Rossley Avenue. He had a son and daughter, Betty and Bill Cosman, and the Shields lived down there, Doug and Gordon, and those fellows, and Harry Arnold's wife, was she a Shields?
She was a Breen.
Breen, yes.
Yes, Mark
okay.
Breen's daughter.
Yeah, now, when you started down the Carter Road, Mr. Breen lived on the left-hand side, and near the top of the road, and he used to have a farm over in Mather's Island, and he had a small motorboat and a raft type of convenience that he put a horse and wagon, a wagon load of hay on, and bring the hay across from Mather's Island to here.
And what did your dad do now, Bill?
My dad worked in St. John at GE Barber Company, and I remember this 1st of September because it was the beginning of the Second World War. And Britain declared war at 10 o'clock in the morning, and Canada at noon, a couple hours after that. And Father, many of the veterans of the First World War, volunteered for the Second World War, but of course they were turned down from age, so they all joined the Reserve Army, and Father joined the St. John Fusiliers, and he served in the St. John Fusiliers until the end of the Second World War, like a lot of people out here. Jerry Anglin and
well-known organization. Yes.
Yes.
What was the population of Fairvale in those days?
Well, I couldn't give you a population, but I can tell you there was no business when you left Rossay. The Mar Road, or the what's
Clark Road?
The Clark Road came down, and there's a service station down at the corner. Was that Athena?
It changed a few times. I can remember being a White Rose.
Oh, yes.
I can't tell you beyond that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you went there, you had to go through an underpass to get underneath the railroad, and it was very much like the one down by Caldwell Store. It was only so big, and you had to make two right-angle turns to get through it. Two cars couldn't pass on it, and I'm sure a fire truck wouldn't have gotten through at all without being well...
Took up the whole lane.
And when you got through, headed up the hill on the right-hand side, you could see the old Fairvale train station.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, those train stations, they were just a wooden box with an open front. The one at Model Farm, that they had service personnel where you could buy a ticket. And the Rossay service station was that way, too. You could actually, they had service personnel inside the stations. But then there was one down by Country Club Heights, and there's another one down by Rentforth, and I think there is another one where would it be now?
Well, did people use those commute daily?
Oh yes, and the transportation in those days, people would get on the train. It was a commuter train, and it would stop at every one of these stops along the way in. And Brookville, there's one in there, and the train would stop at the Union Station. People would walk up Dock Street, Mill Street, and they would go along Prince William and up King, because everybody worked from King Square down to the harbor. Everybody worked in that general area, and the same thing was happening at the other end of town, because there was a station at Westfield. At Westfield Beach, at Onanet, at Ingleside, at Epworth Park, at Grand Bay, at Martinon, and Morna, Kennepec, and Accomack. There's a station in every one of those, and the people would stop. The train would stop every 100 yards, and people would get on. And then when the train got into the Union Station, everybody got off, and everybody walked up Mill Street and along Dock and went to work.
You're up
and
a tall building, you look like a bunch of ants, all even the nest.
Now, where'd you go to school, Bill?
I went to Victoria School, and from Victoria School to St. John High School. Yeah. But getting back to the Fairvale, there was, when you went through the underpass, there was a big store right on the corner going down to Sycamore Point there, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, you had to walk up several stairs to get up to a deck that opened into the store. So, and the stairs were, they must have been 20 feet wide. You could walk, you could have an army walk up the stairs.
That was the John Moore at McElwraith, or it was a post office and a store.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just after you come through the underpass.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a tennis court right next to it. I don't know whether that's still there or not. But then when you went through the Fairvale, beyond there, Francis Avenue was not there. If you went down Shipyard Road, there was a path that went up Francis, where Francis Avenue is now, and there used to be a brook ran down there, and I used to fish trout out of that brook.
Yep. That brook is still there, but just barely.
Yes, just barely. Yes, and and you mentioned one time about an antique dealer right across the road from Shipyard Road.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that house. It was a big old.
That again was another post office way back.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. It was almost right directly across from the top of the shipyard.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Chief, did you go up Fairvale your whole life?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Not quite as far back as Mr. McKnight.
Yeah. And then when you made, just at the turn of the road, the Roberts Farm was up there, and there was a big house, and they had several barns, and there were several boys in the family.
Robert's family, yes.
Yeah, and Gil had a store across the way from it, and right next to Gil's store were several buildings that we used to refer to as the Jewish settlement. They were Jewish people from St. John that used to have a whole bunch of summer residents right all together there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I can remember some of those being there in my day as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually the start of Gallup Point, I guess, right there.
Yes. Yeah.
Roberts, Fireman, and the store were
yeah.
the points.
Yeah.
What stores would there have been around Fairvale then?
None.
None at all?
No.
The one at the underpass.
The underpass. And the next place where you get anything would be right down at Gondola Point itself, but it was just a community hall. It wasn't a grocery store.
So everything was purchased where? Rossay or St. John?
Well, Diggle's. And there were two stores at Rossay Corner, but right by the hotel. Diggle's, what was the other one? Hams.
Yes, Hams.
Hams and Diggle's.
Where Sobeys used to be. And
yeah.
What were they, general stores or grocery stores?
Grocery stores, yeah.
What hotel?
Kennedy, was it?
Yeah. Kennedy House?
Right where the Irving Station for Sale is. It was there. And Wendell Carpenter's Irving Station was down behind the hotel.
Yeah, actually it was Kennedy's as well at that point.
Yes, that's right. It was, yeah, yeah.
Kennedy's had the hotel and the stables and a service station.
Yes.
Kind of at the era when we changed it from horses to cars.
And the fire station was, the barber shop was above the fire station.
In behind Ham store.
In behind Ham store, yes. And there was a little door in the bottom, and the fire truck just fitted in. I don't think you could get in from either side. It was so narrow.
That would be the little one. I don't know if that would be the Model T that we have the replica of the station.
It could well be.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was around until I was there at least till the '30s, and they switched it over to another truck. Now, just thinking of what you were talking about Fairvale, when you came through the underpass and went by Hamilton's store, actually called something else before that, up to the top of the hill, on the right-hand side, there's an older building there that somebody mentioned it was a church or a school or something at one point. You don't remember that building. It's just pretty well right at the very top of the hill.
Oh, I can't see it. And Art Miller built his places, the Mitchell...
Across
from it there, yes.
No, that's the right area. But,
and the Cameron Road was there, but you know, I don't remember the Vincent Road. If it was, it was just a driveway, probably in 100 yards.
Yeah, no, actually, Vincent Road went through, but it was a pasture right in the middle of it.
Oh.
When you went through it.
Oh.
Actually, my dad told me that you'd drive through and you'd have to stop and move the post to go into the pasture, and then at the other end to come out of the pasture again to carry on to the Vincent Road.
Yeah.
So. It was there, but it wasn't much of a road.
No, yes, yeah.
And actually, that as well, and I can't tell you the time frame, but probably the 30s, there was a little store right there, the first house as you turned on the Vincent Road as well.
Yes.
But if you weren't staying in that general area, you may not have been familiar with that store.
Yes, yeah.
There was no schools, elementary schools out there either then?
No, the schools were all in at Rossay Corner. The only business that I recall out the Gondola Point, the road, was the auctioneer.
McCulley.
McCulley. Yeah. That was the only business out there then. And of course, Mark was just a kid. It was Seymour McCulley was the one. And
was that Bruce's father?
Yes. And he not only auctioneered in town, but he also built furniture out in that store.
Yep, had a woodworking shop.
Yeah.
Now, what did you do after school? You grew up in Fairvale, right through high school?
Well, let me see. I can't tell you how far into the 40s. You must remember that during the war, we had ration books for sugar and meat and gasoline, so you didn't go very far. If you had a few gallons of gas, you saved it for special occasions. You didn't go for drives. So I don't think we, the latter part of the 40s, of the mid-40s, I would say we probably had our summer camp at Carter's, I would say somewhere between 1 or 2 years on either side of 1939.
Okay.
But when I was in St. John High School, we were all members of the of the Army cadets, because with the war on, anybody was, who was of legal age to join the military were gone. It was all high school students. Every year they graduated, they went into the service, really. And Harry Arnold was one of those. I remember Harry in town before the war. And then when Harry joined the service, he joined the Air Force and was into the maintenance end of aircraft maintenance. And, of course, he opened his own service garage right next to Gil Roberts' store there. And he maintenanced automobiles.
Yeah, was there for years, yeah.
Yeah. And I have a couple pictures here. Here's one picture of the Breen's ferry. That's right at the end of
coming into Fairville.
Right in the Shipyard Road.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
We'll have to get a copy of that. So it's a...
Perhaps sometime, can Larry borrow that?
Oh, sure, yes.
As and blow it up and then return it?
Oh, yes, yeah. And there's a picture of me on my bike, and that's the cabin that we actually rented down there, right on the beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you went down the shipyard towards the water, was it on the left-hand side?
Yeah, you went right straight down to, I would say... no more than 50 or 100 feet of the shore,
okay.
of the water's edge. And it turns to the right, and there were three cabins there.
Yeah.
And you turn to the left, there were two cabins there, and that was one of the ones that the automobile people.
Lawson?
The Lawsons had. And it ended just beyond their cabin because there's a swamp area in there.
Yes.
And there were bulrushes and long-legged birds. Yep. And now that Francis Avenue comes right down to where that ended. And there's a road goes in from Francis Avenue now into all that development in there to the left.
Okay.
That wasn't there at all.
Oh, okay.
That was all solid woods from right there, right straight through to the Cameron Road.
Okay.
Were there churches in Fairville then?
You know, I don't remember any.
Would you have had Sunday school or churches as you recollected growing up as a kid?
No, not out here. As a matter of fact, when you left Fairville to go to Gondola Point, nobody lived on the upper side of the road. They were all fields with barns, farmhouses. The people who lived in Fairville, they lived on the water side, and they lived, you could step out the front door almost onto the road. They were built so close to the road, and there was very little space between the road and the river. And that's where they live. Mars, down there, and Smith, Lloyd Smith, was another fellow.
I don't remember that name, but that would have been in the Gondola Point.
Yes,
area.
Gondola Point area, and all where Sherwood Park is, that was all farmland. Nobody lived that I can recall on the upper side. Of course, we'd go down there on our bicycles all the time to Gondola Point. And
was there any remnants of the shipbuilding days when you were staying at the cottages down here?
No, I was not aware of that at all. I was rather surprised when Bill mentioned about the shipbuilding. Now, Jack Wagstaff's family were all shipbuilders, but they were ocean-going shipbuilders down there on the Parsborough
area.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that famous ship that they never found, that all the crew were left, and they found the ship afloat, and then no people. That was built there at Jack's dad's place.
Right.
Yeah.
I was talking with Guilford Roberts, who you mentioned had the store in Old Point, and he can remember a couple of warehouses being down where that brook was that you're talking about, just in the mouth of the brook.
Yes, that's right. I don't recall that.
I can't remember the years that Gilpin would have been talking of, but probably prior to the time that you were there. I'm going to suggest maybe the early 30s.
Yes.
And they used those, they stored cotton in the, from the mills in French Village.
Is that right?
The sailing ship would come in the spring and load up all the stuff, take it to Boston.
Yes.
So that was the only remnants. He is the first person I found who had some recollection of at least some of the attributes of having a shipbuilding industry down there.
Yes, yeah.
So you finished high school when you were in Fairville, did you?
No, we were living in St. John, and I finished high school in 1945, and this is an interesting side story for you, but when we were 14 years old, you could get a driver's license, and of course we didn't need a driver's license because there were a bunch of us in the Army cadets. We joined the Reserve Army. We were, the Army cadets were attached to the Royal Canadian Artillery down at the Marsh Creek Bridge area. And we used to go down there after school in the afternoon and get in the Army trucks. And they had a test ground out back, and we would drive the Army trucks out and drive right into a mud hole. And you'd get stuck and put it in four-wheel drive. You couldn't get it out, so you'd take a wire and put it around a post and pull ourselves out. And Wally McMurray and Harry McInerney and Jack Stevens. You know Jack?
Canadian Tire?
Yeah. Jack lives down here.
I golfed with him yesterday. Yeah.
Well, Jack's dad was the company sergeant major at the artillery. And here we were down there driving Army trucks, and we were in 18 and 25 pounder field artillery.
And how old were you?
We were 14 and 15, and then the last year, 1944, there was no threat of invasion on Canadian shores by sea. But there's still a chance that there might be something by air. So our artillery unit switched to 40 millimeter Bofor AK-AK guns, anti-aircraft guns, and we had never experienced much with them. So we took them up to Camp Tracadie for a 2-week summer training up there and fired the AK-AK guns up there on the up on the Miramichi. And we would have an Army convoy, and Wally McMurray would be driving one, and I'd be driving with Harry McInerney. We drove these vehicles, and we only got as far as Newcastle the first night. We had a bivouac in a field alongside Newcastle, and we spent a couple weeks there. Then we came all the way back to St. John again. So we had a great time.
But you still lived in Fairville then?
No. When
did you leave Fairville?
I would say about 42.
And moved to St. John?
Well, my folks lived in St. John.
Okay.
But the summer college was just summertime.
Okay.
Because nobody came out here during the winter. Because all the Redforth area, I would say there was maybe a half a dozen homes that were all winter. Most of them were summer cottage, and then people started to winterize them. But in the early days, there were very, very few. Until you got to the East Riverside area, to where the golf course is. And as a matter of fact, the first big home built alongside with Thompson, that very wealthy, built a great big magnificent home along the 18th hole of the golf course. Mm-hmm. He owned the whole hill there, and he built one home on the whole hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And
so from Fairville, you lived in St. John?
We lived on Leinster Street, and my folks, I left home in 45.
After graduation.
And went to Mount A, and Jack Wagstaff and I were members of the same class 49. That's where I met Jack, and we were both in the Navy together as well.
Okay.
And then when Jack built here, He was one of the first houses up here at that time. Well, I shouldn't say first. Bill Gandy was the first, and then Bert Cosman built his, and then he built his wife's mother's house next to them, and then Shirley's brother was the next house up beyond Bert's. And Ward Haynes built up there.
Yep.
Now, there's an interesting story.
This is all the Green Road that you're speaking of?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Now, Herbie Renshaw and, what was his name? It will come to me. But the two of them, they start to raise pheasants behind Ward Haynes' house. There was the Renshaw Road only went up so far. I think Gordon Fairweather was the last house. There was nobody on that side of the road at all, on the Renshaw Road. Fred Toole was the third house up, and there's nothing beyond him. The next house was, you couldn't see it. Herbie lived up over, you had to walk up, but the road didn't even go up there, it ended. You had to go up and Sir Jigsaw, he had a garden tractor he could get up there, and he had a whole mess of kids. And the name of country, but they owned half of Long Island out here, and they were raising pheasants back at Ward Haynes' house, and then going to let them loose out on the island, and then they were going to have people go out there, and they would pay to hunt the pheasants that they raised. The only trouble is just. Snowmobiles came in at that time, and people could have access during the winter. They never had access before.
Yeah.
Yes, so that ended that.
Now, what did you do after graduation from Mount A?
I went to Mount A for a few years, and then I decided to. I went up to Hamilton, Ontario, and I worked there one season. And I came back to St. John. I went back up to Brantford, Ontario, worked on a farm. Then I decided to, I wasn't coming back. I was going to go to the West Coast, so I went out to Vancouver, and I worked in Vancouver the winter of 47, 48. Come the spring of 48, I decided to go back to St. John, and I was living at the YMCA on Burrard Street in Vancouver, and I decided to, and I bought a Greyhound bus ticket that was that long, and it was via Mexico, because I went down to California and along the Caribbean to Florida and up, so it took me a while to do it, and in those days, there's a bus every 2 hours. So you get on a bus and you travel, and then I would sleep in the bus at night. Then I'd get off. I'd arrive at Los Angeles in the morning, and I'd decide to stay there for a couple of days. And then I'd take a bus at night and travel.
How old were you when you were doing this?
Oh, I think I was...
Mid-20s?
19, 20.
Okay.
That period.
What a venture, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Great sightseeing tour. Yes.
And I got to New York City, and I had an uncle there, and I visited them, and one evening he said, I'm wanted on the phone. I wonder who wanted me on the phone, and it was Mother. He had phoned Mother, and she said, when are you coming home? And I hadn't been home for a couple of years, and I said, next week. So I came back to St. John, and when I was here, I decided I would go back to Mount A, which I did. But then I decided again that I didn't want to spend time there. So I came back to St. John, and I got a call from Mr. Bernan, R.B. Bernan. He wanted me to have tea with him. So I went down, and he offered me a job learning the tea tasting business, and I thought that was interesting. So So I remember saying, well, I'll try it for 6 months. If I like it, I'll stay. If I don't, I'll go. But I loved the man, and it was the greatest experience of my life because...
That was your lifetime career, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
How many years were you with Renan Barbers?
Let me see. Well, we worked in St. John. I was with Barbers for 8 years before Ralph joined us. And when Ralph joined the company, Ralph had been building wharves in Grand Manan and roads in Camp Gagetown. And RB put Ralph and I together the first day, and we were never separated for quite a number. Well, we moved our operation to Sussex in 65. So, and Ralph had four kids, and I had four kids, and boys and girls, and the same ages and all. So Ralph and I had a lot in common. And you know, Ralph lived at the corner of where Barry King lives down the house right on the corner. Diagonally across from the RC Church.
Okay.
Yeah, right there. And RB lived across from Shadow Lawn. Zed bought his place.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay.
The Brennan House. Yes, yeah. It was known as the Brennan House.
Yep. Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mr. Brennan used to be the president and managing director of Red Rose, T.H. Esterbrooks. And they were bought out by Brooke Bond. And that's an English firm. And RB had difficulty getting along with them. So when Mr. Barber decided to sell the business, it was RB and his associates bought it. And there's an interesting, Mr. G.E. Barber, I used to chauffeur for him. When I was going to high school, he had a 37 Packard, and he'd want to go up to visit a branch up in Fredericton and down to St. Stephen. And I remember the St. Stephen, the Queen Hotel, would stay there overnight. He'd say, Bill, take the car and go across to Calais. I never did because I was afraid to drive in the car without him.
Yeah.
And he had a 37 Packard. He used to pay me $5 a day. And he, when I took him to Freighton, he never wanted to go to the Broad Road. He wanted to stop along the River Road in two or three spots that he liked very much. And Mr. G.E. And then G.E. had his name in to get a car at the end of the war. And, of course, no car is available from 1942 to 1946 or 47. And the first car that he got was an automatic. And I had never driven an automatic, and he called me and wanted to go down to the Penfield Airport. And I remember driving down there in this automatic Cadillac. And it was, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Mr. R.B. Brennan was very political, and he was a friend of C.D. Howe during the war, who was... Mr. C.D. Howe ran the government. It wasn't the prime minister. And he promised R.B. An airport in St. John. So R.B. put on a pair of rubber boots and plaid shirt, went out, hiked all around up to here. And when he found the spot, he phoned C.D. Howe and said, I know where. He said, okay, you've got it. And that's how the airport got to St. John, because we were using Penfield as the airport.
So would that have been built in Millersville? Is that they had an airport in Millersville before it was moved out here?
During the war, there was a Millersville.
No, the airport in Millersville was about 200 or 300 yards long, one way. At the end of the airport, there was just a dome, and it was like garage doors that they put the airplanes in, and the airplanes in those days were all by wing. There were no there's two wing planes.
That was there in the mid 40s, I think.
I remember reading about it out at the airport. There's some history on it. I can't remember the dates now.
Yeah.
When they talked about opening. So you're talking about the airport where it's currently at.
Yes.
Today.
Well, Millersville was never used as a commercial airport. Penfield was developed during the war because they bring the English trainees over to train here for the RAF, and the RCAF were also trained there because it was foggy, and there was a lot of fog conditions in Europe, so it was a wonderful place, and they had army camps because there are 2- and 3-story buildings across from the airport in Penfield where they live, because the British Air Force were all trained at Penfield.
Those buildings are still there too, I think.
Oh, are they?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
There's buildings across from the former airport.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Well, if they are, that's where the RAF pilots all live. Yeah.
What do you recall about St. John in those days? What are your favorite memories of St. John?
Well, I could tell you this, that there were no people in their late teens or early 20s. They were all older people in their 40s or 50s, and they're all high school students. And we ran the city of St. John. Half the students at St. John High worked at the DAR, which was the Dominion Atlantic Railway, CNR, which is Pugsley Wharf area. And I worked for the CPR, trucking and longshoring over in West St. John. And everybody, they're all high school students at the place, you know. And every day when you went to work, you were hoping that your crew would be called out for work, and they always were, because there was more work to be done. And you must remember, the grain elevators in those days were not being used, because the grain used to be poured in the ships, were sucked out at the other side, but the facilities in Europe were gone. They couldn't, so all grain had to go in bags, 100-pound bags. So the boxcars, the ships were just filled with grain. As a matter of fact, you'd grab the ear one end, you'd dig your fingers in the corner of the other end to lift the bag. That's why I could still do that. But as a matter of fact, Roy Wills, Roy is a doctor in the West Side. He just retired a few years ago. Roy was always on, we were always on the same team together, longshoring in the West Side. And I lived in the South End, and I'd walk down Prince Street and catch the ferry and go across the harbor and work on the other side. At the end of the day's work, oh, if you're working on flour or grain, you'd be just caked, because you'd be sweating, and the dust, and it's, oh, I swear, I couldn't get up Princess Street coming back, it was so steep. And to get up past Hayward and Warwick, and it was level from there on. And have a shower or a bath, then go up and meet the guys. Then the Beaver Hill, which was a CP freight ship, was going out the harbor, and the hawser broke, and the incoming tide pushed the Beaver Hill. So at the stern was right up on Hilliard's Reef, right where Brunswicker is.
Oh yes.
The stern was right on the reef, and the tide went down. And the ship held. The tide came up. Next tide went down, it broke. The bow broke. So it was there for a couple of years. And the trouble with that was that the ferry boat could only run 2 hours twice a day. So to work longshore, I had to get a streetcar and go all the way. It took an hour to get an hour
all the way around
the ferry boat across. So you asked me what my memories of the days were. That was it. Yeah.
When did you get married, Bill?
Oh, I guess it was the early 50s. Yeah. Yeah.
And did you move out here?
No. When Barb and I were married in Sackville, and we had a basement apartment on Pitt Street, and I was earning $100 a month, and by golly, she got a job at a place called Fraser Brace. You've probably never heard of it, but when they were building the Dew Line up north, there was a buying agency in St. John called Fraser Brace, and they were paying wages that were just phenomenal. They, people who were earning $35 a week all of a sudden could get $100 a week, you know. And so she was earning double what I made. And after a couple of years, we had won and expecting the second, and I started looking for a little place, and we found a place over in Fundy Heights. That was Central Mortgage and Housing, and homes were then worth about $6,000. And not only that, but the home was owned by Central Mortgage, and we paid $50 a month rent to the mortgage company, and that included taxes. Yes, yeah.
This was in the 50s?
Yes, it was in the mid-50s, and then we were expecting the third child, and we started looking at our place. We started looking for a little bit bigger place. Our house was worth then around $10,000. And we thought we're going to have to move up into about a $14,000 home. But there weren't no 14, they were all 17 or 18. So Quinton Heights and that area, and we just couldn't afford that. So I looked around and I saw an ad for out here, and I come up the Green Road, and I stopped halfway up the hill and looked at the house, and no, that wasn't of interest to me. So I turned back down the hill, and Frank Daniels was living up at the foot of the hill then, where
Peter's father,
where Peter Emerson lives, and Frank lived next to us on Lister Street in St. John, so I knew him, and I used to work for him when he had his trucking business in St. John, and he used to hire me weekends to work and so on, and he said hi, and he said, what are you doing out here? I said, I came up to see the Rombo Fair's house. He said, that wasn't it. He said, I saw you up there. That was Ray Green's house. So I turned around, came back up, and came up the driveway, and met Ron Bovaird. And Ron had taken his house off the market. He decided not to sell it. So when we talked, he asked me where I live, and I said I lived in a little five-room brick bungalow in Fundy Heights. Up went the ears, and he wanted to know more about it. So we talked, and his wife's mother was late 80s. This house was, the stairs were too steep. He wanted a little place in town. We wanted a big place, and we wanted this place out here. So, and he was a mason. And when the minute he heard my house was brick, yeah, boy, he was real interested. And the Bovaires, there were five brothers, they're all masons. And we talked, and we decided that we wanted each other's home. So there was only a difference of I think about $4,000. So we didn't buy homes; we traded homes. And Gordon Willett was our lawyer, yes, and he charged us $60. $30 a piece, trade homes.
So you lived out here in the early 50s.
We moved out here, I think, about 58, 57 or 58. So we've been here, and Callum Mackay's dairy was next to us here, and all the cows were up here in the back field. And when I came home at night, around supper time, they would all be sitting up there mooing because it was getting close to milking time. And there were three springs in this block of woods here, and they're all joined together, and they used to gravity feed right to the barn, so that the Cal Mackay's farm, he never had to have a pump
have water,
to have water.
Yep.
And Mr. Allison, of Manchester Robertson Allison, the original one, had all the land right from Rory Grant's road in. It's now called Allison Drive. Rory Grant had a little driveway going up into there next to their place, but Allison Drive, well, I don't think was there. It was probably just a driveway up to Mrs. Allison's house, because Mrs. Allison was married to Joe Allison, who was a grandson of the original Mr. Allison, and he had a hobby shop on Prince Edward Street, and it wasn't too successful, and Joe's gone now. But the original Mr. Allison had this land, this wife, and two sons, divided in half. The half on this side sold to Cal Mackay. So I think the original land went right from the Rosse Road, over the top of the hill, across where the four lane area is now, right past the dam. We used to call it the Dam Road,
yep.
And right out to the Golden Grove Road, which was a mile plus a half, plus a quarter, plus an eighth, plus a sixteenth. It was almost 2 miles. And Cal Mackay had that. And all the land behind me, which is Spyglass Hill up here, was adjacent to it. And I'm not sure if it was Ron owned the land or then not, but if it was Ron, I think it was Ron that owned it in 33, and he sold it to Cal Mackay for $500. The whole, all the backfield to Spyglass Hill.
But big dollars back then.
Yes, it probably was. Yes, and remember, as a matter of fact, we had the Green Road ended just down by that little house across from us is Art Miller's place, and the old farmhouse over here and our old house, all three people worked for Mr. Allison, the original Mr. Allison, and they didn't go down to the road. They had a shortcut through the woods here, and that's where John Baxter built. When we came here first, there was a pathway was through the woods right down to the farm.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And John used to live, Frank McPhee used to, his wife used to have the post office down there right at the end of the Renshaw Road. Mm-hmm. And it was in the house, and then they had a porch in the front, and they closed in the porch, and they made that into a post office in the front. And John Baxter lives in the house next to them. And then we were here about 2 or 3 years when John, there were three properties next to us, all long and narrow, and none of them were any good for anything because there was no size to them. But John got one at the sheriff's sale, and his father got one that's for services rendered when he was a lawyer many years ago. And so John, the woods were so thick in here, the trees were that big around, and they were 70 feet tall, and you couldn't see in there at all. It was just, it was just like this. You couldn't walk, and you couldn't push through it. And our right-of-way came right up through there. And then one day, the fellow he's killed in the plane crash. Who's the girl at the museum, at the library in St. John, the next road? Travis.
Eileen.
Her husband,
yep. Art.
Yeah, he came up our road and parked his car up in our place, and he was a surveyor, and he surveyed that land for John, but John couldn't determine where to build because he couldn't see it, so he had a crew in here during the winter logging. They had logging trucks out on the Green Road that were the logs. Hung over the back of the truck. They were 70 feet long with red flags on the back. Finally, when they were cleared out, John decided the only place he could build was right at the very back. And he started digging, and he ran in the rock, so he had to blast out the corner. And I think it's rather ironic now, because there's a mountain, a rock out here. And Sally, we lost John a few years ago, and Sally gave Kirk Baxter the part of that land, and that's Kirk building there now.
Building there now, yeah.
There's lots of rock there.
Oh, there sure was. Oh, boy. They took a mountain out of there.
What business were there in East Riverside when you moved out here?
When we moved out here, Caldwell's store, the Mercer Farm was a big farm that was right in all that field, right where the church is there now. That's the Church of England moved from here to there. That was the Mercer Farm.
Along with that whole subdivision that's in
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then after you go by Caldwell Store heading towards St. John. That
yeah.
was all the big Mercer Farm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
Fitzgerald then?
There was a little tiny building, but not the one that was there when Joan, that was built years afterwards. And Ron Dumphy was killed at that crossing years ago. Do you know Earl Dumphy out here? No, you wouldn't have known Earl. Earl was in the Navy during the war, and his younger brother Ron was crossing there in a car and was killed at that. Oh, that was during the war because Earl was at sea, and he had to get a special leave to come home to his brother's funeral. But there was a little tiny store there, but it was very small. And but there was a store right where the monument by the golf course is. Right there where the rock is and the thing on top. It was a long narrow store with a roof so high. And there's a great big chimney on the end, and it was a ranch-type store, and it was long, and it burned.
Right near the golf course, right across
from
the golf course.
Right across from the golf course, right where the rock is, where the monument.
Yep.
And I remember it because the chimney was the only thing that was left, and we were having a town meeting one time when Dick Henkelman was a Dutch fellow. It lived down. Appleby bought his place on the Renshaw Road, right at the corner there where you turn up the hill. Gordon Fairweather built across from him, but that was Dick Henkelman's place. And I remember they're having the meeting to just take the chimney down, and Dick said, "Oh, I don't know, that should go." He says, "When I drive home at night and I see that chimney," he says, "I'm almost home." So but he didn't win. They tore the chimney down. And Harry and Andy Green, they were great characters. Oh my God, these town meetings were pet meetings to go to because it was always so humorous because somebody was walking their dog and they wanted a light. Yeah, put out by their place kind of thing, you know, and Harry and Andy Green were just, they were real characters. I'm sorry they're both gone now. Did you know Harry?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yep.
Harry.
Yep, he used to come to the fire station. We worked there.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah.
Quite a rowdy character.
Right? Oh, yes.
Some of the fellows were actually a little scared of him. They didn't know whether
he hated John Baxter because he was a conservative, because Harry was a dyed-in liberal, and any time there was an election, Harry would build a monument in the front of his house down here, and with flags on it, he'd have a picture of the king or something on it, you know, and he was always trying to psych out John. Incidentally, Art Miller bought that little place across the street here. We've always called that the Bachelor House. But the other day, I was down when they were chopping out the rock for Kirk Baxter's place, and the guy came in with the power drill to put the well in, and they were gone in one day. Went down 170 feet.
170?
Yeah. So I said to him, "You aren't here long." He says, "We're going to be here longer. We're going to over to Art Miller's house across the street." So I thought, how in hell is he ever going to get that thing into Art Miller's house? This is one of those drills, this, you know. And then it was backed into Harry Green's house. So Art must have bought that house. That little old house over there, they tore all the windows out and everything. And you know Art takes an old, he takes an old building and restores it and then rents it.
Yeah, make it look good, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I think that's a definitely an asset to us to have that house, because Harry never did anything to it. It was never fixed up too well because the boys looked after it.
So people were, in the 50s, people were living here in East Riverside year-round?
I would qualify that a bit. The homes all through Renforth were basically summer homes, but people start to winterize them and live out here all year. But they ran into a problem because when they were just summer homes, a person had a septic tank and a well that were that far apart. But when they were used for 12 months of the year, they ran into difficulties of getting water and sewage. So that's when they start to winterize those summer homes. Winterize those summer homes in the 50s.
So there are only a couple of businesses there. Riverside Golf Course was here. At that stage,
well,
you were working in Sussex or working in St. John?
No, I was working in St. John then, and Bob McLean had the drugstore across the road from us here.
Kay's former husband, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I knew Bob well, and Bob's sister and I went to St. John High together, where we graduated together, and they lived on Germain Street. Between Queen and Duke, and Larry Bell used to live right across the street from them. Larry and Tom and Bob.
Where?
On Germain.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When did Larry come out here? Would it be in the 50s?
Oh, golly.
I built in 65.
Yeah. It probably would have been the 50s. See, that whole hill up there wasn't developed. It was just what was the fellow that had, he was the Danish consulate. Lived right at the foot of the...
Burnett?
No. Where you turn up, go up to your place, Appleby Drive, there is the Brown family lived on the left-hand side,
yep.
And that was Chubby Brown's brother. They owned the Brown Box Factory just this side of the 3 Mile House.
Yep.
Right, and the house on the right-hand side, the Appleby Drive goes above it. It was down below. He's right on the main road. He was an engineer, but he was also the Danish envoy. Oh, I can't think of it. It will come to me.
Okay.
But Appleby Drive only went up there a short wave.
We were the first house finished on Riverside Drive. When we started, the house, first house on the left had started, but we finished. And Riverside Drive stopped at our house.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then a year or two later, they continued right up to where the Gibsons are.
Yeah, yeah. Was Higgins on your road, or was he on the...
No.
On the Quinton Heights road? Higgins, he used to own Scotia Sprinkler.
No, he wasn't on our road.
Okay.
But our road's interesting. Our road is illegal, Riverside Drive. It's about 15 degrees, and it got passed by the current government, by the existing government then, but now it would not pass due to its very, very, very steep.
Yeah.
What other incidents do you recall, Bill, going back to Fairvale days or East Riverside? What are your fond memories?
Well, in those days, transportation was not by automobile, it was by bicycle. And we would drive to Gondola Point just in a flash, or we used to caddy at the golf course.
What'd you get paid for caddying?
And those days there were three classes of caddies, first, second, and third. And as a third class caddy, you got 25 cents for 18 holes. And you had a little colored ribbon, being able to tell you what you were. A second class caddy got 35 cents, and a first class caddy got 50 cents. But there were no first class caddies because
50 cents for 18 holes.
For 18 holes, but you had to know the distance of every hole to help the golfer to know how far and what club to use.
50 cents for 4 hours work.
Oh yeah, and it was the first class caddies were really all golfers because there's Diz Davidson and Tiger Wood and Burt Balch and Joe Streeter and I don't remember Jim in those days. Jim Streeter. As caddies, we had to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning, but there were no golfers because nobody played golf before 10 o'clock because the grass was wet. They're still doing the grass, but by 10 o'clock, they would start coming in. But those 2 hours, we would go out and we would hunt golf balls along the... And we knew where to look because the golfers would all hit the same spots.
Were you allowed to keep them?
Oh no. Well, we could have, I suppose, if you wanted to. But the golfers always had their name.
Okay.
On them, and you'd turn them in, and sometimes you would get a nickel or a dime for turning them in.
Yeah.
And it was particularly good when you'd get an American. A true American man, you could carry doubles. You could have a golf bag on each shoulder. The only damn trouble was they never played the center. Both of them played on the opposite side of the golf course. So when you went, you went like this, yeah. And boy, would they ever be good? They would give you 50 cents. When you're only entitled to 25, and there'd be the odd real rich man, he'd give you a dollar. And not only that, it'd be an American dollar, which you could always get an extra 10 cents for when you turned it into the bank.
What kind of wages were being earned in those days, Bill, as you remember?
I wouldn't have the foggiest idea because I was in my preteens in those days. And I would have no idea what wages would be at all, really. I do remember the Crosby family. They were golfers, and Crosby Molasses was right in there by the one-mile house. And you would take a streetcar out to the end of Rosse Avenue there. And although the streetcar in those days used to come all the way out and go right out to where Brown Box was, where the 3 mile house is. Well, there were brick buildings, and one of them was the Brown Box, and there's a school next to it, and that's where the streetcar turned and went back in, all the way in.
We're just wondering about wages then, what people were earning back in the early 50s.
But there were no businesses even out the Rosse Avenue then. Crosby and Molasses were there, and the Crosby family were always willing to pick up hitchhikers because they wanted to get them out to the golf course to caddy.
Right.
Yes, out here. And yeah. So you could always tell when a Crosby would come out, he'd go right across the street and pick you up and drive you out right to the golf course, yeah.
Any other stories you can recall that you'd like to share?
Well, I can remember one thing, which was rather odd. There was a right where Lowood is there now, that was a big field, and there were trees at either end, and in the middle of the field was a great big St. John streetcar sitting right in the middle of the field. How it got there, where it went, I have no idea. But I think Dave Lunny owned that property at the time. So
this was before Lowood was built.
Oh yeah, before Lowood was built.
50s, early 60s.
Yeah. The first house on this side, Dr. Morse owned.
Yep.
And then Flewing bought it and restored it.
Martin Flewing, yeah.
Yeah. And then Jaime Marcus owned the house on the corner down here, and his son Mike lived in the next house up, which Tim Harley bought, and Tim's son Ted is the construction man there now, and Ted's grandfather I knew, he used to be the manager of Royal Trust in St. John, and Royal Trust was under the Bank of Montreal before the King, and Mr. G.E. Barber was the director of the Bank of Montreal and Royal Trust. And then when Mr. G.E. sold his business to Mr. Bernan became a director of the Bank of Montreal and Royal Trust, and Ted Harley became a director of G.E. Barber Company, and Ted's grandfather, and he lived down by Jerry Anglin, which is in opposite the Taylor Brook.
Oh yes.
In behind Pike's house down in the back. Jerry Anglin lived down there, and Jerry Anglin was the head of Eastern Bakeries. At the time.
And brother Norm Anglin too.
Yes. Yeah.
Who I worked with. He was worked with.
Oh, did you?
With Larry Bell.
Yeah.
Anglin Bell.
And J.V. Anglin. J.V. was the son. They lived up in MacArthur Apartments on Germain Street, and Larry lived down in the next block on Germain.
Okay.
Yeah. But That Dr. Morse's house was bought, and if you go down to the railway tracks and go along the trestle, there used to be a mill there that Harry Green's parents owned. They had a lumber mill,
yes,
right down there by the trestle.
Yep, I've heard them talk about the Greens being in the lumbering business.
Yes.
That's where it was, right down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll tell you a secret that very few people ever know.
As the
Taylor Brook comes down behind Fred Taylor's home, goes underneath the bridge, and before the trestle, it used to have a head pond down there. It's all grown in with trees now, but there are trout but you can't fish there anymore because the trees have grown out so much, but the fish come underneath that trestle, and they have a perfect home for the right
spot to fish.
Yes, it sure was.
In the earlier days. Huh?
Yes.
You were talking about businesses in Riverside, and I may have missed here, but there was a drugstore down here. Just
McLean's.
Bob McLean's. Yeah.
How far back does that go?
Bob was there when we first came. And I knew Bob quite well, and I would say
mid-60s.
Oh, it had to be before that. I would say Bob was probably there from I would say somewhere around the early 50s.
He did quite a business there. He had a delivery vehicle. He used to run prescription drugs all over the valley here.
Yeah.
And his wife, Kay, of course, is still very active around here.
Well, Bob lost his first wife. They lived down in Cape Park, and Bob lost his wife. And then he remarried. And then he took shoppers in the North End, and John Kent John and Ann Kent bought the and made it into a grocery store, and they came down from Ontario, and John worked at the refrigeration of the
report
the frozen foods at the foot of Dock Street, Mill Street, foot of all the old what's it called it, the he worked for the CPR. They own the freezer lockers there.
Yep. Yeah. Their son and our children played with their children.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Kevin.
Yeah.
I think we've covered East Riverside quite well, and we covered Fairvale, so that's...
I think so. Your time in Fairvale was somewhat limited to a number of years.
I would say there'd be about a five-year period when we summered out here, and I would say I would guess it to be from 37 to 41, okay, in that range.
And then back in the city, and then you came out here in early 50s?
Early 50s, and we've been here for 48 years now, I think, and the road, there were nobody built up. The Renshaw Road ended at the first turn, and Ed Morrill built one of the first houses. Ed built the Kimberly Clark Mill here, and Ted Morrill lived in the house just below Bert Cosman. And Ted Morrill was a professional hockey player for Chicago years ago, and he worked for Essel in the Middle East where they dug for oil, and in those days Essel, if you were in the desert, you were 1 year was equivalent to two. So Ted retired when he was a young man in his 30s, and he came to work for Irving, and he was their hiring man when they were building the refinery. And Ted Moore lives just below Bert.
Okay.
And Adam Bardock built the next house down, and I remember Adam where, and Gary Murphy bought that house, and Adam had a great big rock. Oh my God, it must have been that big, and they rolled it down, and it rolled down the hill until it hit the trees, so the people that bought the corner lot down there thought the rock was part of the property. Yeah. And Appleby, when he bought Dick Heckelman's place, he put roses, a whole string of roses, all around the front of the property. And Logie Armstrong lived down there as well. Logie was a customs man. His wife had that ladies' hat store on Union Street in St. John.
Okay.
Yeah. Right next to Travis. Eileen Travis is their next-door neighbor to Logie Armstrong.
Well, Bill, you've shared marvelous memories.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I just thought of. The Gibbon Road and the Renshaw Road, Mr. O'Neill lived on the one on the corner of the Renshaw Road, and the house next to them, when we moved out here, my parents lived in St. John, and they want to be closer to the grandkids, so they bought that house next to them, and they lived here for quite a number of years, and I lost mother first and then father in 1970, and I sold the house to Mrs. Dr. Oh, I can't think of it now, but the house next to them, which was going down towards the Gibbon Road, where they used to have the little dollhouse in the front on the Yanta, that was owned by Dudley Butterfield. And Dudley Butterfield came from Bermuda, and he married Mr. G.E. Barber's daughter, and they lived in that house. And then Dudley moved back to Bermuda, and now they bought the house down past Shadow Lawn.
Yes.
There's a house in there.
I remember when they were in there. Yeah.
Yeah, now that's
Maiden Lane.
That's Maiden Lane. And that's G.E.'s daughter.
Oh,
Okay. She's still there. She's still Mrs. Butterfield.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
We used to run there all the time for their fire alarm. They're one of the few back in those early days that had a fire alarm system in their house.
Yes. Yeah.
We ran there all the time to the Butterfields.
So. Yes. Yeah. 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 Dudley used to come up here every year during the summertime. And he had the Butterfield Enterprises, and he sold all our barber's products in all through the Caribbean.
Okay.
Barber's peanut butter and King Cole tea and coffee and spices and all those things. And,
When did you first get a television? Probably after you moved here.
The first TV we had? The first TV had we bought at Patterson Electric.
Germain Street.
On Germain Street. And it was black and white, and it came on at 5 o'clock, and they had the test pattern on for about 2 hours, and we'd sit there adjusting the test pattern. It never changed very much, but it was always there.
What year?
Oh my God, that had to be, I would say 52, 53.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Did you ever have any trouble with your television? Who repaired it?
I don't think. Well, the fellow that repaired TVs worked for Patterson.
Okay.
A big tall fellow, Nelson. His name won't come to me right now.
Electrohome was a big name in those days.
I'll tell you, the reason I ask is my dad started up a part-time business, and he fixed a lot of TVs in the area here. Worked for a lot of people in East Riverside and Fairvale and Rossi,
right.
Yes.
I didn't know whether he'd ever been able to fix your television or not.
Yes, yeah.
He did that as I was growing up in the 50s and 60s.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, well, there were really, you know, there were businesses out here there, you know, up on the Mar Road, there's a boy in there used to sharpen saws.
Oh, yes.
And I used to take my saws up and they always do such a good job.
He used to have a saw or a circular saw blade or something right there at the end of a driveway and the little sign that said,
Yeah.
I can't remember who that was.
I'd gone there once or twice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Isn't that where the power station put their plant?
The substation.
Substation
yeah,
there?
Yeah, right in about the right area.
Yeah, yep. Right there, yep. Yeah.
Can't remember his name now. I would have known that one time. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. And Norm, you know Norm Mackay, of course.
Oh yes. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I've known Norm since the days when he and Mel worked for Cal Mackay.
Deliver milk.
Yes.
Yes.
And did you know that the Hilo Farm, this side of Hampton?
That old farm. Yep.
You know the big farm on the hill where you look across to the Pickwacket?
Yep.
That was the Hilo Farm. And that was Cal Mackay's brother, and the Jersey milk that Cal Mackay had, he didn't have enough cows for the whole dairy, so his brother supplied the other half of the milk.
I didn't know that they were tied together.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that farm's still going, I think. Hilo Farms.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you think, Chief? Have we covered topics of?
I think I think we've done a pretty good job. And I certainly appreciate your time.
Too much, or?
No, that's great.
You're now on posterity and very much appreciated.